The Term Machine Radio. Hi guys, welcome to episode 4 of Hot Tub Time Machine Radio. It's lovely to have you here. My name's Tom, welcome. This week I'm chatting to Sneaky Sound System. Sneaky Sound System was formed by Black Angus and MC Double D in the early 2000s in Sydney. They rock parties all over the country, but especially at their legendary club night, Sneaky Sundays. However, they really broke through when singer Connie Mitchell joined the group, and they released massive songs like I Love It, Pictures, and my favourite, UFO. Now just Connie and Angus, they toured the world, released more amazing music, and somehow along the way, found the time to fall in love, get married, and start a family together. They've achieved all their success without a major label record deal, with management, or anything like that, and I think they have an amazing story. They're currently co-headlining our 2018 Wine Machine Tour, and I'm discovering that they are thoroughly delightful people to be around. And I'm super excited that you guys will get a chance to sit down with us as we chat about their musical lives. It's kind of why I started this podcast. Coming up next week, the presets. Yes, I actually got to sit down with one of my musical idols, Julian Hamilton from the Presets, and we had an awesome conversation that I can't wait for you to hear. But first, let's head over to the gorgeous Bondi home of Sneaky Sound System. Guys, thank you so much. I'm sitting here in Sneaky Sound System's house with Black Angus and Connie. Thank you, guys.
Pleasure.
Thanks for doing Hot Tub Wine Machine on the weekend. Did you have fun?
Oh, it was amazing.
Oh, it was really good fun. It was great.
We were suitably impressed, Tom.
Yes.
by the sheer turnout. It was a massive crowd.
It was crazy, wasn't it? 15,000, yeah. That's the biggest one we've ever done.
Yeah, it was crazy and a really up for it crowd. Yeah. And we got to experience our first ever Hot Tub Time Machine experience.
I know, our cherry was popped.
Which was very impressive.
Thank you very much. Likewise.
Oh, shucks.
Do you guys change it up? Like, how does he surprise you by dropping things that you...
He's always surprising me, so I never really know what's coming, sometimes to the point of a little bit of panic, which is good.
Because I imagine, like, you guys, you said at some various points you've toured with entire bands and stuff like that, yeah, backing people.
Oh, we're with a band, like you're locked in.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a lot more
structure. There's a set list.
A lot more structure with the band, but when... Obviously, you can be flexible doing it the way we do. We always tweak it accordingly, and we also are always doing edits and slightly different versions, and we don't really know. There's obviously that we play our songs, but we don't really know what order they're going to be in and which ones. And it was funny on the weekend because that was such a big crowd too. Like, when you have a big sea of people like that, it's not as often easy to see how they react, at the start, so you sort of got to get into a bit of a flow.
There's definitely a wine machine, the whole day is kind of all about getting a selfie and looking really hot and kind of just hanging out and having a wine. I know my audience. And then as the sun kind of hits the horizon, things start to kind of lift off.
Oh, yeah.
And that was definitely your guy's set for me. Things started getting pretty interesting out the back. Hey, so I just want to find out a bit more about your musical history and stuff, because I'm really interested in how musicians got their start. Do you guys come from musical families? How about you, Connie? Did you grow up with music?
My mother was a singer in an African touring. It was a traditional African musical.
Because you grew up in South Africa?
I grew up in New Zealand. My mother was from South Africa and my father was Irish.
Whereabouts in New Zealand?
Invercargill.
Invercargill?
Invercargill, yeah.
Wow.
And a lot of our family, because they'd all moved out from Ireland or England, obviously, and we've got a lot of fishermen in our family. So they all sang too. So that, I guess, a bit of musicality on both sides of the family.
Okay.
Kind of shanties and then other African vibes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what you're hearing around the house?
Yeah.
Right on. Shanties.
Shanties, yeah. With a bit of swearing. Yeah, it's kind of funny, kind of swearing kind of songs.
Yeah, okay.
It's like they were, was like, hey, you know, that should be in the middle of me. You know, those kind of things.
Wow. you're painting a picture of Invercargill as like a 16th century whaling town, which is pretty accurate, I guess. Right on.
Well, you're a bit of a... And she was a dancer too, wasn't she, Connie?
She was a dancer. It was a musical. It was an African musical, so you got to sing and dance.
Yeah, cool.
And do you remember... She had a very low voice.
Do you remember hearing any songs as a kid that resonated with you?
When I was really little, I really liked Caribbean Queen. That used to be my favourite song for a really long time.
Who's that by?
That was by Billy Ocean.
Right.
Yeah, I really liked that one. For me, it kind of moved into Simple Minds world and The Cure in there. That's, you know,
yeah, right,
Psychedelic
on.
Furs,
yep,
things like that.
'80s pop is like a big influence for you. Is that a correct statement to say?
Yeah. But that's what I liked.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, and a guitar kind of bass stuff.
Okay. Angus, how about yourself?
Well, I would go so far as to say that my family were musically mute. they just never seemed to have... Oh, my father did have a big sound system, but he was into country and western, and I just never took a shine to it.
Oh, really?
No, I just couldn't like attach myself to it.
My parents had a Bushwhackers album, and I really liked that.
Yeah, you know what? I tried, but I just couldn't feel it. But my mother was into Demis Roussos, the Greek caftan wearing god. Very recently, after spending time in Greece, when a few other people have brought up a couple of classic songs, and like he was a genuine legend in Greece, but and there are some pretty cool tunes in there, but there was her, and she had a bit of Neil Diamond, but I think she also had a great John Lennon record, and I think that was the first thing that my family...
Do you remember any John Lennon songs? Like?
Oh, just, you know, all of them, Instant Karma.
I remember the one I loved was Jealous Guy. My dad played that all the time.
Incredible.
I'm sorry that
I made you cry. Just, you know, every single thing John Lennon did, I just loved. And yeah. That turned me on to becoming a massive, massive Beatles fan. But when I was very young, Countdown just ruled for me.
Yeah, right.
So that was my first introduction. And I never really took a shine to the Australian music. For some reason, I was just obsessed with English pop music.
Mm.
And I think that's where Connie and I, there's some separations, but there's a lot of, we both had this incredible love of 80s English pop, specifically.
So
we've
heard The Cure.
The Cure and the Smiths for me were just everything. And before that, The Jam.
See, I don't know enough about The Smiths. I know How Soon Is Now, and I'm like, not much more.
Oh, well, look, just go and listen to it. I mean, Johnny Marr, who's the guitarist, is the musical genius of the band.
Right.
And he just created these phenomenal soundscapes for Morrissey to whine away. Pretty much the same melodies, but they were so distinctive.
Yeah.
And I think the marriage of the two was just incredible.
What are your favourite songs?
The songs just, they just all stand up. You know, so much, all of them, you know. I don't have a single favourite Smith song. I don't have a single favourite Jam song. I don't have a single favourite Cure song. It's just, I love every single bit of it, you know. And to this day, whenever I hear them, I think we're a bit the same, aren't we? You're just sort of going straight back to that time. And it's just perfection.
When did you start learning instruments?
I was 12. I think I went to boarding school, and I went to a Catholic boys boarding school. And
whereabouts is that? In Sydney?
I went to Morris Brothers Ashgrove in Queensland.
Oh, right.
In prison, yeah. And the thing that struck me at first was the boys' choir. I just was shocked, you know, and they had these young year 8 boys who was singing, whose voices hadn't broken, and it was just so angelic, and I was taken by it. And there's a couple of the guys played piano, which blew me away. And I started playing guitar straight away. So I was the first couple of months of year eight, really, for me.
And did you like have a guitar teacher and stuff like that?
I got some lessons for a while, but all they wanted to do was teach you Mary Had a Little, this sort of stuff. And
I wanted to do guitar as well, and my mum got me classical guitar lessons, like with the footstool, and I did like Vivaldi's Four Seasons and stuff. It was not what I wanted to get out of it.
This is exactly what I was doing, and the guy was an absolute creep as well. And I think I lasted 2 months, and I thought, screw this song, I'll get a chord book and, you know, learn the songs myself.
Sweet. Can you read music?
I can, but you couldn't give me a score and I could just off right. I go, but I could sit there and work it out, you know. By a year, I can do it very much so, though.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
Connie, how about yourself?
Well, I play the violin.
Oh, wow.
Which is a great skill to have.
When did you start that?
About six.
Right on. My little daughter, Lizzie, my five-year-old, came home the other day. I don't know why. And she was like, Dada, I want to play the violin. And I was
that's really cute.
I know. And I was like, because, you know, you don't want to say that kind of thing to me because I will go out and get you a bloody violin.
Yeah.
You see, we were six. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Sweet. And did you play in the orchestras and stuff?
I did. I played in a lot of youth orchestras. Hmm. I really liked it.
And this is still in Invercargill?
This is when I moved to Australia when I was about 12.
How'd you go with the accent at school?
Well, because my grandparents had such thick kind of Northern England English accents.
Right.
I was okay.
Okay.
It wasn't that thick.
You should get it going on a Northern England. Watch it when it comes back.
Birmingham. Well, what kind of part of Northern England are they?
Yorkshire.
Ooh, that is an accent.
Yep. It's pretty thick.
Okay, I was born in Australia. Then we went to New Zealand from when I was 10 to I was 16. So I got paid out for my Australian accent. And I came back over here to my last 3 years. it was hectic.
But you don't seem to have any Kiwi twang.
No.
I think there's... beating it out of my system. The age where you pick your accent up is between
from
10
seven?
And 12. Is it 7?
I think it's from 7 to 12, yeah.
I think if you move around, like you're forever blessed or cursed with your accent just morphs, depends on who you talk to, like... Anyway, so when did you realise that you were a singer?
Pretty young, like listening to people sing and then trying to mimic, you know what I mean? So I reckon that would have been about same time, around six.
Okay.
I think I did it to a teacher at school, and then she said, took me to the principal's office straight away and then said, do what you just did again. And then I ended up in like a soloist in this big concert like 2 weeks later.
Wow.
Which was pretty...
Do you remember what bit of music you did?
I think it was an opera piece. I was pretending to be Dame Kiri Kanawa.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was just quite big and boomy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought I was in trouble for just being loud.
But your voice was a weapon even back then.
I think so.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's... I think it's funny when you get surprised by something that you do, you don't... Because you're shooing around, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You think it's kind of silly.
You must have just been singing all around the house, though, as a little kid.
Yeah,
though,
I think to develop those
kind of pipes.
But it's like whatever you like when you're little, if you keep doing that, then it kind of turns into something.
Well, totes.
You know what I mean? If you know, those kids that kind of do all those squiggly drawings and stuff, then they end up being amazing illustrated, you know?
For sure.
Because they're always just there with a pen and pants.
Pen and pants.
A pad and pencil, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Well, that's really interesting.
Oh, I just watched this thing about Scorsese and how he was an amazing director, and he always, that's what he always wanted to do
from
such a young age. He was always thinking about how would that look if I made a movie, you know?
Yeah, right.
And he was like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Oh, totally. And then there's people who just have no idea.
Like, this is true too.
I was very much one of those. just no idea what
late bloomer.
To do. This is my third career.
Well, do you know Connie also plays guitar? She can play piano beautifully. And when we had our band, she would always get up and at least do one song on the drums too.
Oh, wow.
She's a mighty fine drummer. So
sick.
She has a great habit of talking herself down here. Huh?
Or underselling. Were you ever going to do anything other than be a musician, Connie? Did you go?
I think it was just kind of a given, you know what I mean? I would have liked to have fantasized about wanting to have done something else. I really would have liked to have been a plastic surgeon. I think that would have been kind of cool, you know, kind of breaking
Why
the remold.
Is that, man?
I don't know. But you've got to kind of say, well, this is what you can't buck it, you know what I mean? That's kind of a given.
That you had that gift.
That's right. Yeah.
And you were going to
I was doing gigs when I was at at school and then having to come back with adults and then having to come back.
What kind of gigs?
Be like a kid at school, you know what I mean?
Right,
like,
on, yeah.
I think I was in year nine and I was 14, 15 and I was doing like corporate shows.
Wow.
Which was like, and you had to dress up and look like you were a lot older. And but I mean, it was like, still exciting, you know?
Yeah, of course. How about yourself, Angus? I read that you were in publishing before you got into this. Is that a...
Yeah, well, I went to, like I said, a Catholic boarding school, and if the fact that you're into music, it was just, they discouraged you in a way.
Right.
Like it's, and you had to be a doctor, a lawyer, and an accountant, basically. It was the path, really. And so I never really considered music, even though it was a huge passion and love of mine, and I'd spend, 6-7 hours a day practicing my guitar all through school. I just never thought about it. And I formed bands at school, and I...
What kind of stuff were you playing in the band?
Oh, stuff that I loved. I think the first song we ever played was Shout by Tears for Fears. Very bad.
Oh,
very
wow.
bad.
Shout,
let it all out. I look back now and go, what were you thinking? It was your first song you'd ever play in a band.
And you were on the guitar? Or
guitar, and I played a little bit of bass, but guitar. I was always a rhythm guitarist. I never had any desire to be a lead guitarist. There's no lead guitar in UK...
Bridge
now,
there's a certain
time. You know, and those guys who play lead guitar, I was like, come on, man, move over. You know?
So, well, it's kind of interesting in the music that you ended up making because it's quite subtle, really, I reckon, a lot of the,
the
electro, quite minimal.
Yeah, so I was in bands from, through school, and then I went and studied a commerce and, but I was a
singer-songwriter,
and I went and sang in bars when I was 18.
Right on.
Yeah, in fact, and I used to play in Brisbane the Friday night. Bernard Fanning from Powderfinger played the Saturday night. And so, and we were all our old friends from back then.
Trouble fills my world, you bring me peace.
When he was going off in like the 90s and stuff, were you kind of going, Bernard?
Not really, because what happened was, and I still run into Bernard every now and again, but as soon as I finished, I just wanted to get the hell out of there and move to New York, which is what I did.
Yeah.
Literally like a week after I finished university, I was gone.
Exciting.
It was always the plan, from when I was 15. I wanted to just go and be...
That was on your map already?
Think that Brisbane was the place for me. It's as simple as that. And
Brisbane, New York?
Anyway, I went there and I... tried my hand at being that singer, and I noticed there was a lot of other people doing it when I was there.
I bet.
And then I went to London to meet my parents who were travelling around there, and I just went to my first rave, didn't I? And
Let's talk about that. What year are we talking about?
Oh, this is in the 90s. So,
in the mid-90s. Do you remember hearing at your first rave?
Oh, look, it was Piano House. And then have, and there's one room's a techno room. There's another room which is uplifting room.
Yeah.
And then there was like, big vocal room. And I was always much more drawn to the techno sort of end of things, And I also was not a fan of house music until I really discovered the incredible breadth of house music.
Right.
So, anyway, it changed my mind. And I was always against the whole DJ mentality because I thought it was just so dumb and easy.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, screw you, guitar.
Yeah.
And I started sending records back. I ended up moving to London and sending records back.
What year are we talking about?
Oh, this is the late 90s.
Yeah, right.
And
pre-millennium, it was like
it was kind of around that time when you'd have to wait 3.5 months for the records to arrive. And they'd only have like 20 promos of a record. And so to get the great records, you had to get them, you had to be on the spot. So I would go every day after I finished work at this publishing company I was working at and buy 20, 30 records and send them back to these two mates of mine who were DJing in small packages. I just started discovering all the stuff I wasn't really into, but through that process,
But London record store was intimidating. I remember I got there in 2000 maybe. I wasn't into DJing at that time, but I was staying with a guy who'd won like a Red Bull scholarship, a really early Red Bull Music Academy thing, and he took me into like Black Market Records. And you go, it was just so intimidating, wasn't it? It's not like a Sydney shop where you could go in and pick the record up from the turntable. So you just had the covers on the shelves, and you had to go and give the cover to the giant man and say, excuse me, sir, can I listen to the record?
Who was that really high?
Yeah. except all the good stuff was never up on the shelves.
So there you go.
So basically, you had to know, they had to know who you were, and they had to to know your taste, which would take
club,
like six.
Oh, mate. And there's so many dudes hanging around just being cool and probably dealing drugs.
It's pretty heavy, you know. Anyway, I tried to fit in. Got myself there.
Yeah, man.
Anyway, it was intimidating and incredible. It was a really crazy period because the whole Britpop thing was going nuts over there as well. And Daft Punk had sort of exploded onto the scene, and it just was changing, like, you know, what I think the simple sort of really basic sort of hidden side of dance music just started becoming this other really exciting thing.
Definitely.
And it just became intoxicating for me.
Definitely. Yeah. Where did you get into electronic music, Connie?
Well, I was in a band beforehand.
Primary.
That
I looked them up last night.
Did you?
And I was like, it just like brought back a really weird deja vu moment for me.
Yeah,
it was
right.
Like some of those songs. I remember.
And that was a bit of both. And but I mean, I always liked things like Depeche Mode.
Right.
Which was, you know, I mean, that's pretty electronic.
Yes. So you didn't have like a rave awakening like Angus?
No, I didn't. I wish I did.
Well, that
sounds amazing.
That came a few years later, didn't
it? Oh, okay, right. Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Angus.
How many years were you in primary for?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, you guys were doing some pretty massive shows, though.
We did, yeah.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, we did. I really liked it, but I mean, I liked that kind of music.
You got to rock the fuck out in that band.
It was pretty, yeah.
Like, I was watching some of the clips, like, you're just in front of the monitors, like, just fucking giving it everything.
Yeah, it was pretty, yeah.
And you, this year, you let it out now!
But it was great, you know? I mean, that's what you do, huh?
Totally.
I liked it.
Do you have, like, a favourite primary song?
I really like Vicious Precious. I think that was, for the time, I think that was really, just a great... I wish we'd kind of stuck in there. I liked it in there. It was good. The great thing was there was a lot of variety. You know, it wasn't all just rock. There was kind of things that were a bit softer and things that were a bit more bouncier.
Yeah, right on.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
But that's what you get when you're in a band with different people. It's a marriage, you know what I mean? You can't have it all. There'll be songs that you like because you've had a big play in it, and there'll be songs that you might not like so much because somebody else has had a big play in it, or the other way around. You like them even more than yours because they're vicious, vicious,
like an animal, so you let it go. And when did Sneaky Sunday start?
Oh, actually, a long time ago now. Yeah, must have been 2000. I basically went to this club night on a Sunday night. Called Lazy Dog, which was run by Ben Watt and someone else, and it was in Notting Hill.
Why is that a name that I know, Ben Watt?
Oh, Everything But The Girl.
Oh, there you go. And I miss you.
Everything
But The Girl.
And anyway, incredible. And so I guess it's in the same ream of what we love, this melancholic pop, really. You know, it's not... you know, down. It's just sort of hidden joy behind this melancholy, which was his trait or their trait.
Yeah.
You know, so he started making house music and doing a lot of really cool remixes for people. And he ran this night, Lazy Dog, every second Sunday. And I went down and I was like, I want to start this. This is me, you know. It's, you know, just really great playing quality house music to a small crowd who just absolutely love it. No bells and whistles. And that's what I'm doing. I just came back. Took me a year or two just to sort of get how Sydney was, because it was just a bit cheesy. It was just sort of not, I don't know, it was different to what I was anticipating. And yes, there's a lot of cool stuff going on, but there wasn't that little spot. So that's when we started Sneaky Sunday.
Well, it's kind of because you did it on a Sunday, so that means that
nothing has happened on Sundays back then at all.
Right.
It was quite hard to find a venue. And people were just all getting ready for 60 minutes, basically, you know.
What kind of, do you remember some tracks that, you know, you might have played at those early Sneaky songs?
Oh, look, you know, Ian Pooley, I would play a lot of the Lazy Dog remixes. I'll write you a little list.
Okay.
Huh?
Sure. That'd be great. Man, I'm still thinking Everything But The Girl.
They did a great song with, actually, that's a really... It was an iconic one, but I think with Soul Vision. There was a bootleg of theirs.
Okay.
I've got it upstairs, I'll give it to you.
Ooh!
Hey.
The girl. And when did you guys meet?
Well, that would have been 2005.
Which I'm sure you've told it like a billion times, but can you tell us the story of how you guys met? I hear it was in a park. Is this true?
It was in a park.
Or is this just a legend?
No.
No, it was in a park. It was in Hyde Park.
Hyde Park in the centre of Sydney.
In the centre of Sydney.
Yes, we were strolling through on a Friday it was, and Damon, MCD Up D, who I'd sort of formed Sneaky with, and we'd set up a studio and we sort of recorded a couple of things, and I would always, because I come from that songwriting background, had these grand plans to make albums and all this kind of stuff, but it just was lacking a singer.
Yes.
Anyway, and we just stumbled across this very pretty girl with the guitar next to her, having a late hangout session with a friend, and we just, I don't know, we just got ballsy and just sort of went, hey, how are you? And
was she singing anything?
No, she wasn't singing. No,
just so, hanging out.
I mean, there's...
All right, so you guys just went over to shut her up.
No, you're not at that point. The legend, it's been distorted that she's a busker and, we sort of,
Yeah, I know, but that was not the case, no.
So anyway, I asked her to sing a song and she sang Nights in White Satin and it was just incredible.
Great. And I love that song.
Nights in White... Oh, you could probably get a better job.
Nights in White Satin.
Nights in White Satin. Never reaching the end.
And so then she's like, well, who are you guys anyway? And then I explained that we had this thing. And then I thought, and I'd just written this song, I Love It.
Yes.
And so I picked up the guitar and I sang it and played it to her. And she thought it was very
still in the park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not all of it, like just the one verse, one chorus kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which was already written, and I'd sort of had a friend of ours.
I reckon you'd be a bit creeped out if somebody sang your whole song that they've written to the hook of the song.
Oh, yeah.
And it just kept going, and you'd be like,
ah. There wasn't a lot of people around, so it wasn't.
Yeah.
We didn't have a crowd.
It was a taster.
And I had this good friend of ours who sort of, I tried to get to sing it, but it just wasn't right. And I said, would you be interested in coming and trying it? And I think, very soon after, she came down and sang it, and it was just breathtaking.
Oh, yeah.
And they literally, I don't think I've ever had a moment when every hair in my body just sort of stood up. I thought, oh my God, this is a fucking hit record. Like that.
Is that like if you as well? Did you know that it was good and stuff, or were you just like, this is a song and I'll sing it?
No, I think it felt like such a gift of a song already.
Right. You really dug it.
That I thought, oh, well, I've really got to, let's work really hard to do this justice.
Yeah. Have you sung on much dance music before, like much kind of four to the floor, stuff like that?
No, none.
Yeah, right.
No. Which I think was a good thing too,
because
I was just really, it was just purely from the heart. Do you know what I mean? Like
sure.
how real can we make this be?
And it's pretty interesting, when I went and listened back to what Connie had done with Primary, there's no similarities at all. There might be a little smidgen of in one or two
true,
songs,
actually,
but that's
yeah.
not as much.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because when you were asking Connie about her love of dance music, I found it incredible, her lack of knowledge of dance music. Like,
wow,
literally almost nil. Well, no, not nil. There was obviously bits.
Oh, yeah, pretty much.
But, I was obsessed. I already had 5,000 records, knew everything about. And it was probably very daunting when you sort of come from that side of being so into it.
Yeah.
But Connie was so into the live side of things.
Yeah.
So,
who are your singing influences?
For a long time, I've always tried to sing like a guy.
What does that mean? Sing like a guy?
I just want to be too kind of whiny at the top end. You know
right.
what I mean? Still wanted the high notes to be kind of not just whiny. Sometimes when I listen to girls sing, I'm just like, oh God, please.
Yeah, right.
But that really big. The big black girl.
Well, Lita Holloway was quite a big black girl, wasn't she?
Yeah, I think maybe she
did Love Sensation.
Yeah, I think she was a big...
Do your bad on time.
Yeah, she was quite a big influence. I'm on, take my love. It's hard to explain. She sings them without any wine.
Right.
I think that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
And then for phrasing, it would be things like people like Jim Kerr and things like that.
Jim Kerr, that's not the name phrasing. I know.
Jim Kerr was from Simple Minds.
Won't you come to hear about me?
Right.
Or a bit of Freddie, you know, a bit of bombasticness from Freddie.
Well, let's talk about a couple of other those songs there. Do you write all your songs on a guitar? Is that kind of the way that you write?
A lot of them, but...
Because it's kind of interesting for people who hear dance music to know that it starts... Or that it can be played on a guitar.
Totally.
The idea of when we were making music, you've got to remember that dance music is a bit of a poor cousin. It just was not respected at all. Yeah. We were offered some record deals, but they were so pathetic.
Yeah.
You know, we could earn the same amount of money in a weekend.
Right.
It's like, well, what's the point? But, you know, they'd go and offer a rock band or some girl group like $500,000.
Yeah.
You know, what do you mean, like a pop girl group?
But if you were in dance, you're like, well, oh, you're never going to sell anything. You're nothing. So,
yeah.
Our roots were firmly in dance music. Like, I just came from a songwriter background. Connie certainly comes from that same world too. So, the plan was to write songs, and we wanted them to stand up as songs first and foremost. So nothing gets through to production stage unless we can sit on a guitar or a piano and the song stands up.
Yeah,
because,
right,
you know, we wanted to
timeless,
think about it
timeless.
As timeless songs.
Huh. I ain't over you, but I'll make it without you. I ain't over you, but I'll make it without you. I ain't over you, but I'll make it without you.
Like the timeless songs we love. Now, whether we succeed or not is time will tell. But
that's the benchmark.
But that's the idea. We just want to rely on too many gimmicks.
Okay.
And also, we didn't want to use samples at this stage because that was what everybody was doing. So we just thought, well, we can write songs, and we want to write songs, and we've got lots of songs, so we did it that way. And then once I'd sort of written some stuff to start with, when I met Connie, I was like, holy shit, and we'd almost finished the first album.
Mm. Oh, right.
Yeah, like I'd done pretty much the music, but then thankfully we sort of redid some of the vocals. And then Connie and I did the... we sort of got into our UFO as the first example of...
Can we talk a little bit about UFO? Because I love that song, and I'm sure lots of people love that song. And how did you come up with that idea?
Just about to go to a gig watching some show about UFOs, and just all of a sudden started singing, I saw a UFO, and nobody believes me.
Yeah, right.
I know, I saw a UFO, nobody believes me. But after that, I said, just said it was gobbledygook. You know, I didn't know what I was saying after that.
Yeah.
And then I just picked the guitar up and just started playing and it was just, that was it. I played a riff and I was like, wow. And then I went to the studio the next day, put it down, and
how do you convert it from guitar to synth?
I just go and play the same notes.
Same chords.
I mean, I can do all that stuff very quickly. And then put some drums behind it and some pads in. I didn't overdo the production, and sent it to Connie. I said, I think this is kind of, I can't stop singing. I think it's pretty catchy. So then that was the first time that we worked how we work primarily now, where I have the idea, but don't go too far. And then Connie will go and add other elements. And then what's turned out to be the case for us is she'll go and write the verse, and I might do a tiny tweak in the verse, and I usually write the choruses.
When you got UFO, do you remember anything about like recording the vocals for that, or like coming up with the ideas for the rest of the stuff?
Well, it's pretty easy subject matter already. You've got a pretty good arrow to where you're going.
Yeah, it's such a catchy...
Well, Connie was the UFO. She was mad into UFOs, you see. So that's why I was like, I can't write anything more because I'm pretty sure she's going to get me. She's nailed this.
You're going to inspire.
Yeah.
What are you really?
Quite like.
You like the fiction of it, or
oh,
you like
no,
the story?
It's not fiction.
There you
it's
go.
Not fiction. I'm a big advocate of extraterrestrial activity.
Sure.
I think they do exist.
Of course.
I think we just cannot purely be in the universe by ourselves.
But I agree with that. It's huge. You know, statistically, I just think they're probably a bit too far away.
They are very far away. But they've got those magnetic engines, you see, and they can bend space.
It'd just be so rad if, like, if it. Do you remember Flight of the Navigator? Like, we were about the same age. Do you remember that when we were kids? It's Flight of the Navigator. It was this thing where this alien spaceship came down to Earth, and this kid gets it like taken on board for a science experiment. He gets to drive the spaceship.
I can't believe I haven't seen this movie.
It's fucking sick.
Okay,
it was like
watch this movie.
Maybe 88 or 89.
Sit down, Navigator. The information I require.
Fly to the Navigator. And then like has to teach the alien like spaceship about like modern music. And then he
yeah. Oh really?
Plays like the Beach Boys tour.
Oh wow.
When's the last time you saw it?
Man, I was on TV. Yeah, pretty recently actually.
Really? Okay.
Well, before I did Hot Dog, I used to cut video mashups and stuff. I was very into that. So I used to go back and collect all kind of footage from my favourite films and steal them. And
have you seen Cruising?
Cruising, no.
No, it's pretty good.
Cruising.
Oh, it's slightly different.
So the first time I noticed the Sneaky Sound System was I saw all these like gorgeous women wearing these pink hats. That was baffling to me. I'd go to like festivals and things and there'd be like a whole kind of army of these people wearing these hats. It was like, but so you built up quite a business on Sneaky Sound System by the time you got to this point.
It just sort of, it was a funny thing. Like, I left publishing, the company got taken over, and I was like, fuck this, I'm not working for anyone else again. You know, like, you work really hard, you do what, and it's just no one gives a shit, you know? Yeah. And then I thought, I'd just try to do the music thing. My dad said, listen, just you can't do one or the other, just go for it, you know?
Right on.
And I was like, okay, let's try it. And we started and it just sort of worked straight away.
Can't have your feet in both camps, son.
And I met Damon absolutely coincidentally like the week before and we were going to be starting the thing. I said, just come down and jump on the mic, let's see what happens. Like he'd done at this party I'd seen him at. And he'd never emceed before. He just was this basically party animal vibe guy. And then so he... And it just seemed to kick in, and it was a really pumping time in Sydney. It was absolutely happening. It was a place to be, a little unlike now. But and then it just continued.
God, it really was,
and then we just kept getting booked and booked and booked and booked, and just it kept escalating. And then the Sunday was the core. And
what's so rad that you guys were? Because I mean, you were able to say the record labels bugger off. You
know? Well, what happened was we sort of went to the various people. You know, they were just sort of a bit.
I've just been
dismissive, and you're like, well, we started doing pretty well with gigs, and you know, and they offered so little that you're like, well, why would we give away all the rights and all to these people that have never put out music like this anyway, and that don't even think it's going to sell many? And we're like, well, we think it's going to sell a few. We think it's good, you know. And so then we just thought, well, how hard is it to start a record label? And then every time we'd go to meet someone who you think know more than us. You realise that no one fucking knows anything. Yeah. And so it got
everyone's
to this...
Everyone's making it up.
Well, kind of, you know, like there's so much bullshit, you know, and no one ever says anything's great until someone else says it's great. You know, there's some traction, but it was very hard to get people to take those risks. Anyway, so thankfully we got this amazing support from Nova very early on. And
the radio station.
Yeah, they were new and they wanted to play new stuff and they were trying to make a difference and they just started supporting a handful of... a new Australian artist, and we were lucky. And also, we got lucky because Telstra, Big Pond was just starting and they wanted a new Australian act.
And were you managing like yourself?
Yeah,
or did you manage
trying to find a manager, but couldn't find anyone new what they're talking about.
No.
So I just kind of took it
off. Like all old things, old systems.
It just did nothing. So we just kept going and kept going. And just, but you know, I found an amazing guardian angel, I guess, in Sebastian Chase from MGM Records, who, you know, we owe an awful lot to because he, you know, I said I need to borrow all this money, like, you know, it was quite a lot, a couple hundred thousand maybe, you know, something like this. But he sort of offered me a really sensible deal, like, and I was like, we're going to really get behind this and we were able to pay him back really quickly and he was able to get his share. But, you know, he did it how he followed his heart. He sort of believed in it. And it worked, and we ended up retaining a lot of our rights, and he was able to do well out of it. And then it got signed to sort of a big UK label. There's a big fight for it over there, and you know we still were searching for labels, sort of managers who could suitably manage us.
It's just like I mean that stuff is intimidating. Like I can't
it really is
like doing that kind of business.
It is, but what you do is you find no one ever manages themselves. There's always key people, like key lawyers, key accountants, key people here. Yeah. Like people who say, oh, no, we look after everything themselves. Insane, you know? Like,
yes.
We have a great people working with us. We just don't have your traditional guru manager who goes, you know?
Like you see in the movies, It
takes 20%.
Unfortunately, it would, you know, we
No, you need to do this song. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Totally. And we have someone who looks after everything day to day for us, but, you know, it's,
Hey, so then, like, so after starting, you know, doing Sneaky Sunday and stuff, then 2007 you're playing the Horden Pavilion, which is like Sydney's, the venue that most of us dream of playing.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That must have been pretty wild to kind of in your hometown do shows that big.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? We did them in all, every, and then we did Festival Hall and they all sold out really quick and everyone was saying we should do some more, but we had to go and play all those big festivals in the UK. It was crazy. It just sort of just kept going. We just thought maybe the records would stop. It'd sort of stop and it just every week there'd be twice as many as last week. And
which year did you do the most shows, do you reckon?
I don't know, last year? It just
keeps going.
It's been pretty consistent.
It's so wild for you guys because, like, I'm interviewing a lot of people of, you know, this younger generation of electronic musicians. Well, but you can kind of like summarize their career quite quickly because, you know, it started in 2010 and then this song and this song and this song and this song. Like their gigs got bigger and bigger and then they're where they are. But you guys, you've been doing giant gigs since you were like, you know, and you guys have been putting music out for so long.
It's kind I think we honestly feel very lucky because we might have been on that last period where people bought records and we were able to have a lot of traction with a very broad group of people, and thankfully we had quite a few sort of what you call hits, I guess, and that seemed to be lingering around in people's back, somewhere in the back of their heads.
And it caught on overseas as well, which is like
In a different way though, like we would be definitely considered quite commercial here, and some people think we're extremely commercial because we're on the radio non-stop, whereas over there we were sort of more considered on the not underground but on that sort of side of things, so it's different. It's very hard in the UK to compete up on that level, but it's just it just seems to keep trucking along.
Totally. Do you have any like favorite kind of gig stories, like anything? Was there a particular sneaky gig that you did where you were like, this is something, this is I really we're doing something here.
I liked the Glastonbury or V in the Park.
Well, Glastonbury was pretty epic.
We were driving there, and the song on the radio. It was on Pictures came on BBC One or something.
Wow!
And then we were driving to the.
I think we were really scared because we were driving there, and this is straight after these gigs at the Horden.
This is like 07.
Yeah. So we're driving, and it was one of the first shows we were going to do on this 3 or 4 month European tour, and we're driving there going, fuck, you know, is anyone going to turn up? We're in a really good slot on the main dance tent, and then we were literally driving past Stonehenge, and on comes Annie Mac or whoever it was with the hottest record in the world right now, because they have this thing, the hottest record in the world, and it was Pitches, and it was the first time we'd heard that mix on the radio, and we were like, wow. And it sounded pretty good. And we thought maybe a few people might come out then. And we got there and it was absolutely just mental. And pretty intimidating because, you know.
Glastonbury, like I've never been.
Well, you got to remember there's 500 acts at play.
Right.
You're not anything special, no matter who you are. So you're like, here's your dressing room for an hour.
No.
Unless you're Shirley Bassey.
Here is your trailer. You're hot. Half a trailer that's been divided in two.
You've got 15 minutes literally changeover.
You get a 12-pack of crisps, 12 warm beers and a bit in there since 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, you're sort of expecting a little bit more of a greeting.
Right, there's your dressing room, you've got 10 minutes.
And then they haven't even plugged in the main thing and we're about to start and we're all like shitting ourselves. The tent's rammed, there's about so many people outside. And
a mirror?
And you've
Wait,
only
what?
Got...
You need a mirror?
It was like that, wasn't it? And then you do it and it was insane. And then like piss off you go.
Yeah.
Next one in.
Next.
Yeah, right.
So it was kind of like crazy intimidating but also very exciting.
Oh, yeah. The UK crowd, they do go pretty hard, particularly at festivals.
They love it, don't they?
Glastonbury is just such a...
Well, they put up with it too, in the rain and the mud. And
I know, we're
in
so lucky.
Us in Sydney especially, it's raining. As if I would go.
Yeah, well, that's the other embarrassing thing. We were there all in our white shoes and, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's...
And it was an absolute mud bath, wasn't it?
Oh, right.
So that was pretty cool.
Sick. Any disaster gigs?
Disaster gigs.
I love a good disaster gig story.
We played in New Zealand and the power went out twice during the set.
Oh, man.
Big day
out. We only played one and a half songs.
We played Big Day at Main Stage.
I felt so bad. That was so excited.
Yeah.
Like, and that's it. Hi, how are you?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Festival. Normally you can turn those things around, but on this occasion,
it just wouldn't come back.
I saw one in Belgium at Rockwerth. Have you guys ever did that? It was a great festival there. And I was watching Patrick Watson, like as a singer, and like the power cut out, like, and he had 15 minutes to go. So like ran off stage, grabbed a megaphone, ran into the crowd, jumped off on the sound desk and started like just singing his songs. Like,
oh, that's
like,
that's clever.
Rock and roll.
That's awesome. Very anyway.
Yeah, I just want to like talk, just ask you some more general like questions about like music that you like. Like, you're obviously house music aficionados. Do you have any favourite house music that's kind of has inspired you?
I am a bit of a nerd when it comes to shopping. Like, I always buy sort of 20, 30 records a week. And
right.
We listen to, you know, a couple of hundred.
How many records do you own at the moment?
Oh, as little as few as possible.
Right.
I've been giving away. I gave away to a bunch of mad house heads here. I think 4,000 records a couple of years ago. So just take them because I've got so many. But I just don't go back. And as many great records that I've found digitally, I have. You know.
Yeah.
It's just I prefer it that way.
Yeah.
And
after a while, it just becomes like so much extra.
I don't know.
Shit,
I think I could play.
Every time you move, it's like you get a fucking truck for the record.
It's a nightmare, you know. It's really is. So I don't know how many I've got left, but I buy an awful lot, and because of that, I'm a bit of a slut when it comes to music. I don't, you know. I'm always moving on. You know.
Sure.
So I don't ever.
You're such a tart.
Musical tart.
So I just love. I just love house music, really.
Yeah.
And I do love sort of the techno end of it as well.
Yeah.
But I can't pinpoint specific tracks, you know. I could sit down and play stuff for many hours and end there.
Right on. Absolutely. All right. Well, fuck it then. What are your top five songs of all time, Connie?
Oh.
And look, I'm going to do this to everyone, and it's unnecessary pressure.
Can you start?
Unwarned. Yeah, so I'll do my top five. My top five changes every time.
I need a pen.
Just to like,
damn.
You know, just to like show you how meaningless and to not get stressed about it is. Okay, top five songs of all time for me this week. Number five
is
Protection by Massive Attack.
Oh.
Trace and Thorn.
This girl I know needs some shelter.
She can sing, incredible. Number four will be, Angus is getting a pen and paper. Number four,
okay,
I'll go These
visual.
Days by Powderfinger. I really love that song. That's my favourite Powderfinger song.
Isn't it lovely?
It's gorgeous.
Geez, lovely, Bernard.
Yeah? I got Wes Carr, who sings with me sometimes. He does an amazing version of These Days. We've done it a few times together.
Oh, it's such a lovely song.
I think it's one of the most beautiful Australian songs ever. Well, I'll go number three, Flame Trees. We'll keep it Australian.
Oy.
That's a great Aussie song. Number two, I will go with Cinematic Orchestra, To Build a Home.
There is a house built out of stone.
Which is a song that was my bridal waltz. What did you guys dance to at your wedding? Did you have a bridal waltz?
What did we dance to?
Yeah, it was Shaka Khan.
Yeah.
Well, I've got a total mental blank now. But it was a sample for Daft Punk, Thomas Bangalter sample it for Music Sounds Better Than
With you.
Oh, right on.
That one.
Okay. Sick. All right, my number one song of all time is You Make Me Feel Like an Natural Woman, the Aretha Franklin.
Hey! There you go. Looking out
on the morning rain. Do you like Aretha?
I love Aretha.
Who are your favourite like kind of singers to listen to and stuff?
Whitney's pretty bloody good.
Right. Like, what Whitney songs do you like?
I like them all.
I like them all.
I like how she goes from her chest to the head voice. I like how she does that.
Yeah.
I like, I want to dance with somebody. Clock strikes upon the hour and the sun. I like Randy. Randy Crawford. I like the way she went. One day I'll fly away. she does.
All right, Connie. Top five songs.
Top five.
Yeah. I mean, he's making notes and stuff.
Why is he making notes? He's going right. Together your computer. I've used my brain. Okay, number five, Easy Lover.
Ooh. What do you like about that song?
It's just so exciting.
It's so smooth, isn't it?
You just want to get up and go, oh, quick, the song's coming on, quick, quick, quick. You know?
Totally.
I like that one. Gosh, number four. We've got to have some Eurythmics in there.
Ooh.
So maybe, Here Comes the Rain Again?
Here comes the rain.
Pretty nice one. Pretty nice. Number three, Prince. Private Joy. There's this bit in the middle of the song where the time signature changes up, and then it just does it for like 8 bars. But right at the end, I love that when you listen to a song and then right at the end there'll be this 8-bar passage.
Oh, yeah.
That does, and you go, oh!
Yeah. I like it when a gospel choir comes in at the end. I think that's my favourite songwriting device. Like a Prayer Madonna, gospel choir comes in. Amazing. Number one, favourite song of all time, Connie Mitchell.
Shivers. what's one that I always go on? Oh, you know what? It would be Love Theme from Blade Runner.
Wow.
By Vangelis.
Sick.
Just so good.
Right on.
Vangelis is amazing. You actually feel like you're in the future when you listen to that music.
Yeah, right on.
That's like synthesized music for the future. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Memories of Green, everything he does is fantastic.
Right on.
I feel like I am in a different place, and there's like cars that fly and beams, and you can go to Mars tomorrow if you wanted
totally.
To, you know, and you eat food that's kind of compressed.
And aliens are here and there, you know, they're all around us.
That's what that does. That's what that does. So that would be
sick, man. That's a good top five. Well done. All right, he's back now.
He's back.
I'm excited.
The cheater. Well, this has got to be the top five. Today, though.
Okay, yeah, no, mate, this is the top five all time. This is going to be put in stone.
So, number five would be I've got to pick a Cure song, and I find that even one of the hardest things, even coming up with the top five is difficult. Top five Cure songs would be hard.
Sure.
But I'm going to just go with In Between Days.
Go on, go on, just walk away, go on.
Because it's just, you know.
Nice.
It fills you with joy.
It does.
Now, right. I love the earlier stuff probably more, but for some reason that song, I think, covers The Cure.
Yeah. Today is your number five. I said it was true, that it could have
been me, or in between. In number four, from the same era, there's got to be a Bowie song in there somewhere for me.
Oh, yep.
So I'm going to go with Changes.
Changes. Turn and face the strain. Changes.
Because it's just perfect, isn't it? I mean, we never mentioned David Bowie earlier, but he's just one of those guys who has had a huge impact, I think.
Well, your kid's named Iggy, is that right?
Yes, after Iggy Pop, actually.
Oh, yeah. So I was reading Ziggy start this.
Well, listen,
I'm heaps good with music, guys.
Listen, they were very close.
They were very close.
Bedfellows.
Wink, wink.
Number three. That wonderful Chaka Khan song I was mentioning before that we had at our wedding waltz.
Yes. Which
is called Fate.
Oh,
and it's
Fate.
One of the greatest disco songs ever written. You play it on over and over and over again. It's got that incredible riff that the Daft Punk
ding, ding,
Thomas
ding,
Bank
ding,
Thomas Bank ding, Ultra ding, of Daft Punk.
It sounds better with you though.
Yeah.
That's it, it's a straight lift from Fate at the start, but then it opens up into this other incredibly joyous.
Oh, you, yeah.
Hands in the air.
When I heard it, I was like, what?
Number two is a very different track by the wonderful Herb Alpert, a song called This Guy's in Love.
Oh.
Is that like a Tijuana Brass guy?
This guy's in love. This guy's in love with you.
You see this guy. This guy's in love with you.
Right on. That's a very, yeah.
Is it like one of those?
I think one of the greatest trombone solos of all time.
Is that the Tijuana Brass guy? Do you know the Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass? The same
could be.
Old dude?
Yeah, right. Probably would. He's very old.
Well, it's got a brass solo.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
I just find it impossibly romantic.
It's very romantic.
Yeah. And then probably my favourite song of all time, which is certainly a song I've played the most at parties and, you know, is New Order, Bizarre Love Triangle.
Hey!
Wow. Awesome.
So there you have it.
Sweet. Thanks for your top
Today's
five.
Top five.
Today's top five has been brought to you by...
by Hot Tub Wine Machine. Please come. I need to pay off my mortgage. Have you got your seaplane license yet, Connie?
No, but do you know that to get your seaplane license it's not as complicated as you think. You just need to get your boating license.
Go on. Yep.
Your boating license. Then you go down to the seaplane place, which is one in Rose Bay. This is the closest to where we are now. Sure. And then you do a couple of lessons. And then all of a sudden you have a seaplane license.
So it's easier than a normal pilot's license?
100%, because you're already halfway there because you've got a boating license because it's half of the water.
So the moral of this story is probably don't catch a seaplane.
Yeah.
Well, yes and no, but if there was a zombie apocalypse, you'd be in a very good position.
My zombie apocalypse, I always think I'm going to be the guy who sells everyone out. Just I want to negotiate with the zombies, you know, just let them, I don't think they're that bad. all right, well, thank you guys so much. That'll do.
Tom. Thank you, Connie.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
See you on Saturday.
Yeah. See you.
Oh, no. Fucking following, so we'll be in New Zealand as well, actually. We're in Christchurch.
Well, I'll see you the week after.
Thanks, guys.
See you then.
Wasn't that delightful? And like 12 hours after that interview, turns out we were on the same plane to New Zealand. And so we got to hang out some more and... just the loveliest people. Thanks so much to Angus and Connie for having me in their house. Very excited next week for the presets. Massive shout out to everyone who's left a review on iTunes, in particular the Boilermaker guy who left an interview that absolutely made my day. Please do leave a review on iTunes or your podcast server saying that you'd like the podcast. That would be a big help. And send me a message on any social media where I'm Hot Tub Time Machine. Thanks so much for listening. Catch you next week. Bye.